Hi, welcome. We're a little bit late, but we're here. So I have with me today, we're going to be talking to Luke Yardley from Yardley Brothers Craft Brewery in Hong Kong. So Luke's coming on just to tell us, because I have no clue about the beer scene in Hong Kong. In fact, my images of Hong Kong generally are just kind of cliches from movies and books. So I have no clue. So Luke, you're...
Hi, Brian. How's it going? So yeah, Hong Kong, it's an interesting place to make beer for sure.
So let's start with that. How did you get into, are you native to Hong Kong or did you move there?
No, I'm British. I lived in Edinburgh before I came to Hong Kong. So I came here 13 years ago, with no plans to start a brewery whatsoever. To be honest, it wasn't the plan. I came over to learn about purchasing in China. That's why I came to Hong Kong. But I kind of fell in love with the city and also a little island called Lama Island, is where I live now. And so I decided not to go back. So I stayed in Hong Kong for a while. And a couple of years of me just hanging out on the beach and having fun. And then my brother arrived, and basically he brought over some basically homebrew ingredients, because we used to brew before when we were younger together. Basically, we made a little bit of beer, and then me and him got back to brewing some beer, and then it kind of took off from then, because you know, that would have been about 10, 11 years ago now, but there was no craft beer in Hong Kong at all. You know, 11 years ago, craft beer, there wasn't a scene. It didn't really exist. Some of my mates tried my beer and said, oh, that was pretty good. And so I continued making a little bit more. And then we got this, a little homebrew shack. It was what we called the beer shack. We're literally a corrugated iron shack on the way to the beach. So I used to brew 60-liter batches of homebrew in there, and then basically sell it to tourists on the weekend.
And this was when you had your day job.
Yeah, I had a day job. I was working. So basically, I worked in was working for a business school, selling MBAs, and then I also was basically working in education, pretty much. Right. And then, from that, one day I decided to quit my job and go in and build a brewery. A lot of things happened, you know, from the homebrew stage before we decided to go into the full-scale brewing. But that was what kicked everything off, basically. Just by chance, my brother came to visit me and brought some ingredients.
And like you said, there was no craft brew scene there, like... Is Hong Kong a big beer place? Or because I have kind of an impression, like I said, of that there's a lot of spirits are very popular there, but I'm not sure where beer or.
I mean, well, people in Hong Kong drink a lot, that's for sure. People like the beer. Is it Hong Kong 11 years ago? Didn't have much of a craft beer scene. Historically there has been. A company called Hong Kong Beer Co. has been around for quite a long time. But they changed ownership. And now they're doing great, great, good local craft beer. But I think, you know, maybe 10, 15 years ago, they weren't as craft focused. So for the history of the craft beer scene, Hong Kong Beer Co., I guess, would have been the first guys around. Also, there was a real ale brewery called Typhoon Brewing Company. That only made cask conditioned real ale. A guy called Pierre, he ran that. And he was kind of a pioneer in his area. That's not around anymore. And then 10 years ago, basically, a couple of us met up in a homebrew shop. There was, we all met up, and then quite a few of us then went off and started breweries. So now you have Young Masters. So there's a guy called Rohit and Tom, and they started Young Masters. And then, you know, a guy called Laszlo, he started Moon's End. A guy called Chris Wong started Heroes. And that was basically, we were all, I say, it was Chris Wong was the homebrew shop owner. And And yeah, so we went there and chatted to him and met the other guys. And then we decided to go all in and build a brewery.
And everybody just kind of developed their own brew. So was it a big homebrew scene there? Or like, it sounds like maybe it was even the homebrew scene was even very, very small.
Yeah, well, the thing is, Hong Kong is, it's a big city by population, but it's a pretty small city as far as you end up knowing everybody in the city. Okay. It's you know, there's not that much space, and for sure the homebrew scene is not massive. There are lots of challenges of homebrewing in Hong Kong because of the temperature. You know, it's damn warm, so it's difficult. You can't leave your homebrew to brew; you have to cool it, so to ferment. But so yeah, it probably was a pretty small scene, and but yeah, it's been. I've got to say, Hong Kong's beer scene now, it's amazing what's happened in the last 10 years. We now have a pretty impressive beer scene as far as variety of breweries. Quality of beer that's been banged out here is pretty good. Hong Kong came away with a lot of awards in the Asia Beer Championships. For just a small city, we did pretty well competing with other countries. There's a very good scene here. Like, if you'd be surprised, if you come to Hong Kong, you'll find a lot of good craft beer bars. You'll find craft beer everywhere, in supermarkets, in even in the 7-Elevens, you'll find craft beer.
So. Yeah, and what changed then? That, like, did they change the rules or something? Or because, again, looking at things from the outside, you have this impression of Hong Kong being pretty unregulated, that someone could have started a brewery without any problem beforehand. But so...
Yeah, I think it was a lucky sort of, let's say, a critical mass of enough people doing it at the same time. So guys like Pierre, the sort of pioneer guys who did it before everyone else, it was probably very hard for them, I'm guessing, because there wasn't, you know, anyone else doing craft beer. So therefore, there wasn't sort of a public awareness of it. There weren't enough venues to sell it. And it just happened to be, I guess, we all kicked off roughly the same time. And then together, the industry's grown. And now, as you say, you get craft beer all over the city. It didn't used to be like that. You know, there was one pub called The Globe that was the place to get craft beer. And there was another place called The Roundhouse. There's two of them 10 years ago. So now there's a whole load of different places to try craft beer.
All right. But it's not that they changed like in a lot of places where they kind of relaxed rules or something like that suddenly kind of
surprised. Hong Kong is a funny place, actually. It's a very, very easy to start a brewery. You know, we don't have tax on alcohol, which is great. Right. Nice. We don't have, as far as regulations for building breweries in Hong Kong, there's quite little understanding by the food department that regulates them. But then the ironic thing is when you come to build a brewery, we had to jump through some loopholes. For example, we had to add fat filters into our piping because it had to be ticked off as a food factory. So some silly things like that, which don't really make sense because we're a new industry. That was why. Yeah. No, so when we built our first brewery, we had to jump through some funny loopholes. Another thing I had to do was I had to put a fridge in our brewery in order to cool the food. Even though obviously the entire brewery has glycol cooling system, but we had to put a fridge in there just to get the license. You know.
And are they still the rules, or have they kind of more adapted them now to craft brewing?
They have not changed, so they're exactly the same. as I say, we have no tax, which is pretty good, but the real tax for us comes in rent.
Right, rent I would imagine it.
So at the moment, you can see behind me, we're in our barrel room, but we're on the fourth floor of a building. So we're not on the ground. Yeah, so my brewery is on the fifth floor and the fourth floor of a building. Because ground floor rent is very expensive. So so for our current brewery, that it's that kind of upper. In an industrial building, our new brewery that we're building right now is going to be ground floor. But we've been working quite hard to get to that point. So,
the obvious image of Hong Kong is that it's very, very crowded. So that must, like I said, it must, like, it does it make it harder, even just like you're up on an industrial building, you're up fourth or fifth floor, but is it hard to
What other challenges, you know, as regards things like piping and all of that that you were mentioning, you know, like,
The limitations of being further up in a building is that the ceiling height. We don't have high ceilings, and the floor lining, because you don't want to crack the ceiling of the building. So that limits us. That limits us to the size of our tank capacity in our building. You know, we basically in our current brewery we make about 10,000 liters a month in our current brewery, and that's absolutely maxed. And we've got lots of small, you know, smaller size tanks. But with a new brewery, it's ground floor, so the tanks are about four times the size of our current tanks.
Five times. And how hard? Where's the new brewery going to be then? It won't be in the heart of Hong Kong. It'll be off. Is there some place?
Yeah, industrial place. You wouldn't want to go there apart from to drink my beer.
So it kind of limits your brewery tour, so does it?
Well, as you say, it's actually really close. It's just behind a shopping center, so it's quite easy to access. But it's more of an industrial area. It's not, you know, in the middle of the city. We have a bar in the middle of the city called Yardley's on 62 Peel Street, but our brewery is by the port, industrial area. Okay. That kind of area. So.
Yeah, I saw on the website. You still have that shack, do you?
We don't have the original shack, unfortunately. The landlord did take that back at some point. But we have a bar on Lama Island called the Beer Shack, which is it's a lovely place. It basically does slow cook barbecue, and we have 9 taps of beer. And it's on Lama Island, which is a little island that has no roads or cars. It's where I live, and it's a lovely place. So you go for a hike, and you can finish with a pint of beer.
That sounds sounds pretty good. So So what is the beer like? From what you said, let me try and summarize. So I mean, it's come from nowhere. It's suddenly become very popular. But is it the same kind of beers? I know you, because what I'm leading to is that you have a large barrel aging, as you can see, and you're into more kind of traditional ales as well, I think. But is that the main market, or is it all IPAs? And
I think, like most markets in the world, a 5% pale ale is probably going to be the top volume selling product. I mean, within Hong Kong's quite an interesting place for consumers. People are not traditional consumers here. They're not as conservative a consumer as you might expect. I think part of that might be there are a lot of people are big foodies in Hong Kong. So if you release a beer that's pretty out there and unusual, people will give it a try, which has been great for us. So we make a beer called Thai Chili Getaway, which is chili and basil sour. And that's been really popular. But I think that maybe if we had more traditional beer consumers, they might not give that a try. It might be a bit too out there for them.
Right.
So, you know, that's good. Definitely. Saying that, low ABV, slightly hoppy beers are always going to sell the most, I think, at least for the moment. I mean, there's an element of Hong Kong's hot in summer, so you need to make sure you get beers that are good for drinking in summer. For our barrel aged stuff, we make a lot of wine focused beers, beers that are aged in Burgundy barrels or Chardonnay or something along that lines. We also have, the beer I'm drinking here, this one is Quit Your Job. So this is a Saison. So this is the beer I made when I quit my job and started the brewery. And it's a nice, crisp 5% Saison, good for drinking on a hot summer's day.
I noticed that you had on your, like, again, just going for your website, you have a beer to tabbed. You seem to have a big focus on that, or you're at least pushing it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, but I mean, table beer, I think, is something that I've been very interested in, and we've been producing more recently of it. So we've got a series called Two's Company. I don't have a bottle here, but we've got a series called Two's Company. So the idea was to make a French table beer. So I use a beer de gare yeast and a bit of coriander, a bit of orange peel. And it's a really, really good yeast. And then release a 3% table beer. And then we released a barrel-aged version of it, which was a 5%, 23-month Chardonnay barrel-aged version. And we released them together as a pair of beers, so people could kind of enjoy the both of them at the same time. It's kind of about the social element of beer.
I suppose that whole thing of like slightly lower ABV beers, is that the main market there? Because how does that work out with your barrel aged?
Not really. As far as like low ABV beers, you often get a lot of people come into the bars and they want the strong IPA. Mm-hmm. Low to no alcohol beer is a relatively new trend in our market, but there's definitely an increased demand for it. I think weekday drinkers, if you want to go out and have a pint, a couple of pints on a weekday, but you still got work the next day, that awareness has arrived in Hong Kong and people are interested in low to no alcohol beers. I've tried quite a few different no alcohol beers, and to me they always kind of are missing something. There's an element of, they're okay, but they're kind of a bit more like a hoppy water. So I'd much rather drink a beer at 2 or 3%. It doesn't matter how much you drink, you can't get drunk if you're drinking 2% beer. So for me, you get more, more genuine beer character in that kind of product. So that's an area that I want to make more beers like that.
Yeah. So that, but I see that a lot. Like, just talk to people. I think that awareness of, like when craft beer kind of exploded, say, whatever, 15, 20 years ago, whatever, it was all about high alcohol. They were all competing by, we have the strongest beer ever made and that, and it was all that. But now it does seem to be coming more into, we want to be able to drink a pint on the week, some weeknight, and have to get up the next morning. And I think there's a place for it.
If you compare the UK beer scene and Hong Kong beer scene, we're basically a little bit behind what's happening in the UK. So I think the trend of table beers has been around in the UK for quite a few years now. And we're basically the first guys to make table beers in Hong Kong.
Okay.
So it's not really a very well-known style here. But I think that going forward, I believe that it's going to become more and more popular. We'll be making more for sure.
Right. And is there any particular, saying table beers, I mean, that can be anything. So are you kind of looking at, kind of lighter stouts or just lighter beers, everything, just saisons? What are you a lower or and a higher alcohol version of different beers, or are you going to specialize?
Not necessarily. I'm not going to do, for example, a low alcohol version of all my products. I think some products are meant to be designed to be a certain way, and it probably wouldn't make the best beer in the world if I made a 3% version of my Imperial IPAs. Wouldn't be the best. So I think it'll be better to focus on my table beers are probably going to be much more focused on yeast focused beers, not really hop focused beers. Maybe more European styles of beer, and saison, beer de gare, stuff like that. Maybe some sour element in there, because I'm a big fan and believer in sour beers. I can definitely see us doing more of that. If you get a nice, refreshing 3% saison on a summer's day, it's the perfect beer.
That pretty much hits the spot. But the sour, so like I said, if you're behind, like a few years behind where, say, Europe is, or UK specifically, then sours must be coming big into view, are they?
They are. Sour beers, wheat, so are massive. I've been making sours for quite a while now, but last year, I'd say the last maybe 2 years, we've seen a real, there was a moment where there was a shift in sour beers. Like we'd made, I can introduce some of our sour beers if you like. So we made some beers like this one, which is called Passion Fruit Slap, which has a small batch of beer and has 100 kilos of whole passion fruits in, which is kind of fun. This one's Thai Chili Getaway. It's chili and basil sour. And so basically, We released a beer called Mango Sticky Mango, which was a mango coconut imperial goza, and it tasted like the Asian dessert mango sticky rice.
Okay,
that was there, and that was the first time where we had a sour beer that really blew up. I mean, we had people queuing down the street to get it, and you know, it was a very, very popular product. And I think that for us, that was the moment where I realized sour beers really had a big following in Hong Kong. So we now do release that once a year, and people get all excited about it. It's a fun one. But yeah, I enjoy good Asian fruits in our beers.
Where do you? Maybe we'll get on to any exporting and awards and that later, but where do you distribute the beers? Are they like you have a bar, you have a shack, but is that primarily where you're selling, like on draft in those places, or are you selling cans and bottles? Or actually, I'm going to preempt my other question, cans or bottles, or is there a preference in Hong Kong?
Okay, so cans or bottles, at the moment we do only bottles, mainly because. When I started the brewery, we're not a brewery with massive amounts of investment. We funded everything ourselves. So we had to make a decision on buying the most expensive piece of equipment in the brewery, which was the packaging line. And I had to decide between canning or bottling. And basically bang for my buck as far as quality, dissolved oxygen, package stability. The bottling line was much better than the equivalent price canning line. Yeah. That doesn't mean that canning or bottling is better. It just means it costs you a bit more to buy the equivalent canning line of the equivalent bottling line, in my experience. And so that's the decision we made. However, with our new brewery, we're going to have both canning and bottling. In Hong Kong, the general consensus in Hong Kong is that a bottle product is a much more premium product than a can product. Canning is relatively new. Like the amount of cans in Hong Kong has increased in the last 3 or 4 years, and people are starting to shift that consciousness of, like, you know, the idea of spending I don't know, the equivalent of £5 or €5 on a can is still a lot of consumers is still a little bit like, whoa, that's too much. Whereas if that was a fancy bottle, it might be okay. I think that cans are going to become more and more popular. We've also just got a new tax on for the first time, we have a tax on bottles coming in Hong Kong, which is, in my opinion, it's meant to be a green tax. It's a little bit silly because cans are, you know, made out of plastic. But anyways, we have that new tax coming in. So probably a lot of producers will shift more to cans as well.
Because I've seen cans kind of came out of nowhere, really, in some ways, because a few years ago, bottles were... Everybody wanted bottles for the reason you were saying. And then suddenly the consumers wanted them over here and wanted cans and everyone switched over. But they do still keep the bottles for the barrel age stuff and that. You'll see that the premium stuff in bottles. So there is still a mental divide as to what a bottle represents versus what a can represents.
I think, and for us, for like the long-term plan and drive of what we do, the new brewery is much more focused on barrel aging, mixed fermentation production. So we have a bigger capacity for that. And also at the moment we have a manual bottling line for mixed fermentation and an automated bottling line for normal beers. However, in future we'll have an automated bottling line for the mixed fermentation beers. So we're going to be producing a lot more, and they look a bit like this, our ones. So they look a bit like look a bit like a wine bottle. And that's the kind of area that we're going into as far as, for consumers who are kind of, let's say, beer curious. They're wine consumers, but they might try a bottle in. It's a bit more of a fancy bottle. And what's inside is complex and interesting, like a good wine. I want to be making a lot more of that.
Right. Yeah, so, sorry, just to go back then. So you've been... Like you said, your sours are very popular. So I didn't kind of qualify. Were they kind of kettle sours and your mixed fermentation then, or different, or a different one?
We do both. So we've got a lot of kettle sour stuff, like the Thai Chili Getaway beer that we make. That's kettle soured. It has a whole load of fresh basil in it and a whole load of Thai chilies. And, you know, we do pastry sours, stuff like the mango sticky mango. That was it's a goza, and it's kettle sour, and just pink salt in there. And but then our barrel aged stuff is all limited at the moment. Well, it's all quite small release, so it's single barrel, or, you know, maybe one of 500 or one of 1,000 bottles. So basically our brewery is split into two sections. We have a mixed fermentation area, and then we have the clean area. And separate packaging lines for everything and all that sort of stuff, to make sure that we don't get any things where we don't want them. So the new brewery is designed in the same way. Basically, it's actually two breweries, pretty much, but within one venue.
Right. And when's that going to open?
Touch wood. Let's say July, August.
All right.
Relatively soon. It's a bigger facility.
Yeah, is it significantly bigger or like?
It is. It's quite a bit bigger. So I mean, our current one, say we do about maybe 10,000 liters a month, and our current one, the new one, will do about 50,000 liters a month, something like this.
Yeah, okay.
So it's a big jump, but we've been spending a lot of time. I say as a company, we're not. It was basically just me and my wife's life savings, and that's how we kicked everything off. So we saved up and worked towards this, and so I'm looking forward to have a fancy new brew kit to play on and see what we can do, because we've been using an old, I don't know if you know the Porter Brewing Company, but it's a really old brew house made in Lancashire. It's a real ale brew house. So that's what we brewed everything on so far, and it's, you know, you stand on a podium, you mix the mash by hand. It's pretty old school. Looking forward to the new brew house. It'd be nice.
Right, is it more automated? Like, is it a complete automated one, or will you?
Not fully auto, semi-automated,
excuse me.
A bit more modern, a bit more efficient. I'll be able to put more oats in my mash without getting stuck, which would be nice. custom made one. So we worked with a company called Yolong. In China, those guys do some really good brew houses, and they made a brew house for a friend of mine in Singapore, and also they make some stuff for some German brands, I think. New brew house is all custom made for us. Funny brew house, because it has two boil kettles, so it's got a specific souring kettle, so we can sour beers at the same time as brewing a different beer.
All right, okay. So you're going in for the sours. Pretty big time.
Yeah, absolutely. New brewery is going to be very, very much sour focused.
And so are you selling only within Hong Kong, or are you, excuse me, are you exporting, or have you plans to export, or like?
Yeah, so we sell around Hong Kong, so you'll get us in our bar, and you'll find us in our bars, and then you'll also find us in all the good craft beer bars. There's a local supermarket, one of the chains stocks us, and good hotels. So like the Four Seasons and fancy hotels and where else? The Ritz-Carlton and the Grand Hyatt. I don't know. Some other ones like that. We've got our beer. And then as far as export, we don't do, we were doing a bit of export pre-COVID. So we sent our beer to Singapore, but that kind of stopped with COVID, and so we're just ready to restart. Actually, so we're intending to restart export to Singapore. We currently send a bit of beer to Malaysia ever so often. We work with some guys up there called Farmers Bar, and we send some beer up there. And ever so often, I send some beer to Melbourne in Australia. But it's not a big massive amount of beer sending over there. It's just, you know, for beer festivals or. Things like but we're intending to what I want to do is to try to basically send more sour beer around Asia. That's my I don't see the point in exporting 5% pale ale or even a hazy IPA. It seems silly to me, because they're only good fresh. You should drink local ones of those. I want to export sours and maybe some barrel aged imperial stuff, something a little bit more unusual, I guess.
Because I was like, it would strike me that, you know, like you said, the rent in Hong Kong being so expensive, that really shipping your own cost, that the cost of that to, say, Singapore might be okay because that's the thing, but to Vietnam or someone might have the, you know, the, there's a cost disparity there, so you'd only be going with the more premium barrel-aged stuff or...
Well, yeah, that, the, there is an element of that, but actually you'd be surprised because we don't have any tax here. It's not too bad. You know, our, it does help us because we don't have any tax at all. So that's kind of good, I guess. And you know, for example, Thailand, we're planning to send some beer over to Thailand later this year. And those guys have very strict rules on craft beer in Thailand. Basically, it's still not, it's almost legal to make beer in Thailand. Like people are making small amounts, but it's still very hard for them. So we're going to be sending some beer over there. And there's you know, I think there's enthusiasts everywhere who want to try something a bit special and grab a bottle of something.
Yeah, no, that's why I was thinking maybe it makes sense for the more premium stuff. But like you said, like a 5% pale ale maybe doesn't, you couldn't get the price that you need for that, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. And there are a lot of really good. I say Thailand's a bit of an exception in Asia. They say they still have some struggles with the government regulation of them. But like, there are a lot of great in Vietnam, for example. My friends at Pasteur Street, those guys are making great beer over there, and John Heart of Darkness over there. And of course, their production cost is probably going to be much much cheaper than ours, I guess. But yeah, there's a lot of really interesting craft beer around Asia.
Right, yeah, because that's why I wanted to talk, because I have no real... It doesn't seem to make its way over here yet, you know?
Well, yeah, well, watch this space. We'll see if we can send some over to you.
Right. We won't say no. But yeah, like maybe it will stay always more regional, because like I said, especially with IPAs and stuff, like you have to drink those fresh, so it's only the more premium, maybe the barrel-aged stuff might get reputations and ship, but everything else will be in small quantities, really.
Well, I think there's one thing that a lot of people who are in Europe or in the US are missing out on is a lot of the amazing flavors of Asia. There's, you know, Asian food is pretty amazing, and some of that transfers over into the beers we make. So things like a mango sticky rice sour, you know, if you taste a mango in the UK, it doesn't taste very good. If you taste a mango in the Philippines, it tastes absolutely beautiful. So I think there's probably a market for some Asian flavored sour beers for export. That's what I'm planning to do. So so you know, things that are a little bit an unusual taste that you might not have had before, in Europe. Hopefully send some over.
And does that focus on Asian food? Is food and beer pairing a big thing?
For me, it's a massive thing. And it's not, well, I wouldn't say I only focus on Asian tastes. I just let's say I focus on flavors and tastes that sort of inspire me a little bit. And so I've got, this is a Sauterne sour. So this is aged in a Sauterne barrel. It's actually fermented with Sauterne yeast as well, which is kind of fun. And I love Sauterne, so I wanted to recreate that flavor in a sour beer. That's a lovely one. You can use it just in the same way you would for food pairing. This one's Mum's Rhubarb Crumble. So not really an Asian inspiration. It's just when I was a kid, my mum used to, it's actually my grandma's rhubarb, but my mum used to make a nice rhubarb pie, and I created a beer that tasted like that. So yeah, a bit of inspiration of different things, but it's got a, I don't know if you can see the artwork, but it's got an interesting label. It's basically a Hong Kong family. Sort of a very, let's say a very international mixed family having Chinese food and rhubarb pie, which is about as Hong Kong as you can get, because very international mixed culture here. So.
Yeah, actually, that's something I wanted to ask you about, because it's such a mixing melting pot. Is the beer more among certain groups, do you think, or is it like certain groups won't try it and just stay with traditional stuff? Like, or is it just across the whole community?
I think there's a bit of a stereotype of the sort of British expat who drinks a lot of beer here. Hopefully I don't fulfill that stereotype. not really. No, I mean, for us, our consumers are I mean, for us, our consumers are, there's a lot of the young Cantonese guys and girls are really into craft beer. There's a big following of consumers here. You know, there's not a male-female divide, I think, in the same way there is in maybe other countries. There shouldn't be in general, because, I mean, you know, your gender shouldn't define, I guess, how you drink. But, I mean, no, there's a very big local following. There's a really big scene of local consumers who like craft beer. I think the other thing is that one thing, I guess, for us, because I'm British speaking, my Cantonese is pretty bad. I can order a beer in Cantonese, but I guess that for us, it's mainly more English speaking or international Chinese or Cantonese people will be more aware of our product, I guess, because of that. I mean, there's, like I said, there's a lot of local support for craft beer.
Right. Yeah, it just occurred to me that, because it is such a melting pot there, you know. I mean, it's got people from everywhere that it might, you know, that even a small niche of that market was probably huge, you know. But
yeah,
I mean, what is the population of Hong Kong, by the way, just off the top of your head?
Don't quote me on this, but about 7 million. It's probably 8 million by now. It's a small place, a really, like, you'd be shocked if you come here how little land there is and how many people are. It's very, very intensely, very densely populated. However, one of the funny things, which is a surprise in Hong Kong, is it's very densely populated in the city center. But if you go out to the national parks, or you go to the little islands where I live, there's very few people. I mean, it's relatively. So, like, the little island where I live has got no roads or cars, and about 7,000 people live there. But the land mass is almost the same size as Hong Kong, which has 7 million people in it. Not quite. It's actually a bit smaller, but still, if you think of the people per square meter or whatever, it's there's a big contrast there. So the nice thing about that is you can get out of the city and you go into the countryside pretty quickly. Where I'm it's just 25 minutes from the city center.
Like, as someone who's never been there, like I said, you just have this image of it just being completely crowded and no free space at all, except maybe for a racing track. Horse racing is still very big there, isn't it?
That's right. Yeah, the jockey club. So we've just resumed the horse racing post COVID. I was there the other week for St. Patrick's. Some of my friends were playing. They were playing the music there. The place was packed. It was good fun. I mean, the horse racing's there, but the city centre is really packed. But Hong Kong's a city of contrast. You go from madly squash packed, and then you'll be in the jungle with no one around. It's quite funny that.
And actually, if it's all either one or the other, do you have to import every single ingredient then?
So almost. Almost all of our ingredients. So basically, all of our barley comes from Germany. Yeasts come from the US Europe, I guess. Sometimes, ever so often, we get to use a local ingredient, which I really enjoyed doing. But there's very little. Farming doesn't. There's a tiny amount of farming in the far north of Hong Kong. But one of the things we do every year is we do a forage beer. So we basically all the guys in the brewery go out into the jungle on Lama, and we pick these berries called Wanpei berries. So they're quite unusual. I could describe them as like strong citrus flesh, but the skin of the berry is almost spicy. It's a really unusual berry. So basically, every year we go and we pick wild 1P and we make a beer from it. Right. It's a lot of work, a lot of work, because we need to basically, for a batch of beer, we need to pick about 40 to 50 kilos of fruit. So, Anyways, it's always fun. So that's an example where we like to use a local ingredient. That's about as local as you can get, a wild berry. And people in Hong Kong are quite surprised about that. It's an unusual thing to do, but we enjoy it. There's no barley being grown here. There's no hops being grown here. Yeah. So
everything's important. So yeah, that. Well, again, I was going to say that adds to your costs, but again, there's no tax, so it offsets.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone, as far as costs, everyone in the world has experienced the increase of barley around the world. There is an element of Hong Kong market is pretty premium. A pint of beer here is quite expensive, I guess. Like, so a pint of beer will be about €8. For a pint, something like that. Mind you, saying that, I went back to the UK for Christmas, and I was kind of shocked how expensive a pint of beer was in England. I was.
Yeah, I don't know where it is in England, but try it in Dublin. You're probably cheaper.
Yeah, well, I'd say, so I'm going to be in Dublin next month, I'm going to be there for. I'm hoping to try some good local craft beer in Dublin, so I'll have to hit you up for some advice.
But be prepared, your wallet will probably suffer as well.
Okay. Right. I'll bring a war chest.
So where are you going? So with Yardley's, you're moving into your new facility, which is somewhere about 5 times more capacity. And do you think are you going to grow into that capacity? Is there plenty there to grow into, or are you going to try and fill it from the start? And where are you going with it?
It'll always take a bit of time to fill that capacity. But we've been a small brewery for quite a long time. And we build up a reputation of being sort of one of the leading breweries in this part of the world. We've got a pretty good following, and we've got some demand for export around Asia. So we're going to capitalize on all the work we've done for the last 7 years. And see where that takes us. But it won't be instant for sure. I'm expecting, about a year or so to get to the current capacity of the brewery. And then we've got a stage two expansion plan for the brewery. I don't intend to be the biggest brewery in Asia. It's not my interest. I quite like to be one of the best, but I'm not going to build another brewery after this. That's big enough for me.
And then you just focus on
I think there's a turning point. Yeah, I'm going to focus on just creating more interesting beers. But I think there's a turning point when you get to a certain size of brewery, you start to have to compromise. And that's something I don't want to do. So I want to be able to make the beers I still love. Otherwise, what's the point of making beer?
That is that mythical line of where does a craft brewery stopping a craft brewery and become just another brewery.
Exactly. And that is, there's always elements of basically as you grow, you have to, there's no at a homebrew level, there's no compromise whatsoever, because you don't care if you throw the batch out or not, or if anyone consumes it or not. And then you start making beer, and you have to start to really, obviously got people to look after and bills to pay. But as long as I think that a very important thing in order to retain an element of being a craft brewery is to make beer that is a representation of what you believe, not just a totally mass market product. I think, if you start to make a beer that's completely consumer driven, just like you'll always be making an average product. A lot of people might disagree with me on that as far as being consumer focused. Of course, we look at what people are interested in, but we're also making beers that we believe in that are meant to be a bit divisive. I don't want everyone to like all my beers. I want people to have an opinion and have a chat about it, basically. there's definitely an important element of that for growth and maintaining being a craft brand.
Yeah, it's always a balance. Yeah, so just then, maybe you could just summarize something for me. I mean, Hong Kong beer scene, so not just yourselves, but it's the overall scene is growing, and it seems very, very vibrant. How many breweries do you think are there now, roughly?
Well, give or take, we've got about now, this might not be the latest figure because things change quite quickly, but let's say around 14 breweries in Hong Kong. Okay. But of them, some of them are, you know, they're brands, so they make their beer in another brewery. Okay. So if you arrive in Hong Kong and you want to come and visit, do a craft beer, like visiting the brewery, meeting the brewer, you'll probably find around 8 breweries that are, yes. So you can go and do that with them. So for you know, for a tiny little space, it's not bad.
And
if anyone wants to visit us, they're very welcome. Go on.
Okay. Well, they'll have a great new place to visit anyway in just 2 months. So.
Yep, for sure.
Okay. And across Asia then, just where is Hong Kong in kind of in terms of Asian beer market, do you think? Because you were saying like that there are some really...
So there's some really interesting beer in Asia, absolutely everywhere. I think an interesting way to gauge that is if you look at we have something called the Asian Beer Championships, which are run by Cebu, Southeast Asian Brewing. We have a conference once a year where we all meet together.
Okay.
Everyone in Asia gets together for basically a big beer conference and a big party. To be honest, it's a great thing. So with that, there's a competition where all of the beer in Asia gets judged together. And you know, Hong Kong has been in the top three countries or places in it consecutively for the last, I don't know, for as long as I can remember. We've been doing pretty well. Saying that, there's an amazing, I think China had the best this year. China has an incredible beer scene. If you go over to Shenzhen, just across the border, you'll find really good beer. If you go up to Shanghai or Beijing, you can find a lot of interesting beer up there as well. Then Korea's got a really good rep. I was with some guys from Korea from Gorilla Brewing Company last week, actually. They came to visit us in Hong Kong. Okay. Japan's got an interesting scene. Japan's good craft beer, but it seems to be a little conservative as far as it's still quite on the more traditional, you know, IPA, pale ale. There is a very small scene of mixed fermentation and sour beer producers in Japan. If you ever want to go and try good mixed fermentation and sour beer in Japan, you can go to something called Saison Sour Barrel and Brett Festival. And it's in Nozawa Onsen once a year. So it's run by a friend of mine, Tom, who runs Anglo-Japanese Brewing Company.
Right.
It's one of my favorite beer festivals ever. It's great. So it's Saison Sour Barrel and Brett.
Right,
it's a good festival.
It's sort of like the good mixes.
I don't know all of them, but that's some of the places I visited. Also, obviously Vietnam and Thailand as well. I've got a pretty good scene there too.
Right, so it sounds like, I'm sorry, I'll let you go in a minute, but I'm going to just formulate my thoughts. So like most of the beer trends of stuff across the world have come out of America over recent years. Like it's all been the hops focused, and now it's slowly turning into maybe more sours and ales and, you know, the more mixed fermentation and barrel age. So, but coming out of Asia, you think there might be some new trends coming out of there, like with the flavors and with the ingredients that we should be maybe looking out for?
Yeah, I think in Asia, we've got a beer industry that is relatively new. We're developing, but some pretty exciting developments within that and some innovations. I think you'll find probably different trends coming from different places in the world. We had a pretty interesting beer that we made using a type of fungus called Aspergillus arisae. It's also known as koji. This is something that's prevalent all over Asia. You find it in China for a baijiu production. You find it in Japan, in Korea, for different types of fermentations. But so we made a beer, a sour beer, using that. And that won an award for innovation, which is kind of fun. But I mean, that's just a small example of something we did. There's a lot of other doing, you know, unusual stuff in Asia I think we'll always learn from what was before. So, you know, people are going to be imitating some styles from America, imitating some Belgian styles, some UK styles, but little bits of adjustments and innovations will come along the way. But we're still, I think, if you look at the Asian beer industry, we're kind of teenagers. Maybe, right. You know, we're not, you know, let's say a fully mature industry that's been around for, you know, long time or generations. But in some ways that leaves us open to find our own path and create some interesting things on the way.
And there's a lot of tradition there, like you said, with Koji and with sake, and, you know, all of that stuff can probably influence, hopefully, some interesting stuff to come out.
Yeah, I mean, then there's things like tea culture here, which is fascinating. You can look at, there's all the interesting fruits that, you know, some fruits that I'd never heard of before I arrived here, and start to be able to brew with those, which is kind of fun. There's a lot of things, and then spices, herbs, inspiration from all the food. There's a lot to be done. So
excellent. Well, hopefully we'll start seeing some of that over the next few years, and you'll manage to start exporting some over here, some of that stuff.
Yeah. Well, it would be a good excuse to come to Dublin I could send some beer.
Excellent. Listen, Luke, thanks a million. It's a good chat. Thanks for your time. And hopefully we'll keep an eye out. And I'll try and get this posted up later today. And thanks a million for your time. Cool. I'll just play out a little video here to let us go out.
All right. Well, cheers from Hong Kong, guys.
Cheers. Let me...